to the game of the year, the one we've all been waiting for. There's a capacity crowd here. The conditions are absolutely perfect, with an atmosphere that's really electric. Now, the band's just leaving the pitch, and we're waiting for it. Yes, I think I can see them. Yes, it's the team. Here they come. Just listen to that roar.
You are listening to Four at the Back with Dan and Ken.
And welcome to Four at the Back, everybody, with Dan and Ken. Ken Tomash and Dan Loney back with you. This show kicks around four topics from the world of American soccer each week. This week we'll talk about the surprising Seattle Sounders, DC United's search for a stadium, possible venues for the United States bid to host the World Cup, and the indoor soccer season comes to a close this weekend. We'll talk a bit about that. Dan, how are you tonight?
I'm good. I'm feeling good. I'm in a state of clear.
Topic one.
First up, the Seattle Sounders. They're 3-0. They haven't given up a goal yet, and they host Kansas City Saturday. Dan, the real deal or beginner's luck?
Beginner's luck. I'd love to come here and say, well, didn't everybody expect they would go through the whole season unbeaten, untied, and unscored on? Part of it is I don't want to totally dismiss them because it turns out Ziggy Schmidt can coach and build a team.
Who knew?
But yeah, who knew? Well, for a few years there, he couldn't. If things had bounced slightly differently in Columbus, he might be back at UCLA, but that's true for a lot of coaches. What he's doing specifically in Seattle is he's really formed a team with, I thought, was an all but randomly assorted set of players. He didn't use a lot of the USL Sounders. Sebastian Letou is the primary exception. He drafted a lot of players that had people raising their eyebrows, and I don't think I'm the only one who thought that Casey Keller was going to replicate Jurgen Sommer's career or Ian Foyer. A lot of European-based keepers come back to MLS and didn't impress. Obviously, Casey Keller has. But the other part of it is, it not only is it early, but the real tests haven't been. We don't know what the real tests are in MLS right now. We thought New York would be a little bit better. We certainly didn't think the Crew would be this bad. Toronto, I think a lot of people were overrating them. I think they believe their own press releases. We're going to see a regression to the mean for a lot of these disappointing teams. So we'll have to see it with Seattle.
Well, you mentioned the Toronto win. Okay, Toronto's not Brazil 1970, but it seemed like Seattle went in there and won without even breaking a sweat. I got to give them credit for that, at least.
Absolutely. And this is where I don't like to be the kind of naysayer, but Toronto clearly thought, this is our, we've got the support, and look at all these great new players. And they weren't expecting to be punched in the neck by Nate Jaques' beautiful assist. I don't think anybody saw that coming. And I don't want to make this more about Toronto, but I don't think Di Rosario is the player he once was. And I certainly think that they thought bringing guys like Di Rosario and Siriu back to the fold would magically make them bloom in their homeland, and that's not always the case by any means. So I think it's slightly more about Toronto not being that good. I think they were also misled by getting out of Columbus with a tie.
What impresses me, I think, is the fact that they haven't been scored upon, because half of their back four was not even in MLS last year. John Kennedy Hurtado was in Colombia. Zach Scott is the other USL Sounder who's played a key role. And then you have journeyman Tyrone Marshall, who I know you know very well, and James Riley. I mean, it's not exactly Carlos Alberto and Beckenbauer back there, and yet here they are 270 minutes in and no goals against.
This is one of the things where I need to back down off of Tyrone Marshall. I thought he was pretty much done when he broke Kenny Cooper's leg with the Galaxy. Ziggy Schmidt saw an opportunity to bring him in. He's very has a lot of confidence in him. I didn't know that Marshall could lead a defense, because he didn't with Toronto. He wasn't the leader in Los Angeles. Certainly now, both those teams could use him. And this is the sort of thing that Ziggy's brought to the Sounders that I didn't think he was going to, certainly not in March and April.
All right, last thing on Seattle, I'll do it quickly. Freddie Montero, nothing new as of today on the investigation into allegations of sexual assault against the Sounders young striker. Now, his agent did say it was more a case of a relationship gone bad. It's a he said, she said type of deal. And we don't see much of this in MLS, thankfully, though players getting in legal trouble is nothing new in other sports in this country or in soccer around the world. Why do you think it doesn't happen here as much in MLS? Do you think there's a fame or lack thereof component to this?
Absolutely. I think that they don't have the opportunity. They don't have the means. They may have the motive. They don't have the means. They don't have the opportunity. They don't have the money, and they don't have the fame. So the only people brought up Mario Gori, and I think it was, correct me if I'm wrong, Raul Diaz Arce. And it turns out the woman also accused Marco Echeverri, who had a pretty good alibi, seeing as how he's in Bolivia at the weekend in question. There was also Carlos Ruiz, who didn't surprise. You said a relationship issue with Montero. I think Ruiz had sort of the same thing in Guatemala, but we've pretty much written off Carlos Ruiz as any kind of human being. But the real reminder is has nothing to do with soccer. It's the Duke lacrosse players. Nobody wants to rush to judgment, at least in our little corner of sports media. I think largely because of what happened at Duke. A lot of people ended up looking very silly. I would have too. I mean, not that anybody was listening to me, but I certainly bought into it. I don't think anybody wants to make any assumptions about Montero that they would have to take back later.
Well, there's our cultural and anthropological segment for the week.
Topic 2.
Second topic, DC United's being thwarted in its attempts to find a stadium. They thought they'd found a home in Prince George's County, Maryland. Lawmakers there put the kibosh on it. Now they're back to square one, playing a nearly 50-year-old RFK Stadium, which cannot be a long-term option. And Dan, late this afternoon, our man Stephen Goff of the Washington Post had an interview with Don Garber in which he simply said, if we're not going to get a stadium done, we're going to move the team. Do you believe him?
I don't know. I believe he's very angry. Especially, it's hard to separate this out from the economy right now. But again, this has been done to Garber before. San Antonio pulled the same sort of deal. They announced a team in Cleveland and then had to scramble to find a replacement. So this isn't Garber's first rodeo, but it is his first Great Depression. I think he's trying to rile up Washington, D.C. and other communities in the area. I think it's a bluff, but it's a bluff out of he's certainly written off Prince George's County. I don't think he's written off the entire region.
Well, earlier I spoke with our man in the D.C. area, Ed Morgans from the Fighting Talker podcast, and I asked him why it is so hard to get anything done anywhere in the D.C. area with regards to a stadium.
A couple reasons. First, you have an area that is tremendously built up. Any spot of green open space around here is swallowed up by developers left and right. So simply finding a place to put a stadium is problem number one. Number two, you have to put the stadium somewhere where it will have public transportation access on the metro subway here, or people aren't going to go because they're not going to be able to get to it because of the traffic problems that encompass the whole area from Northern Virginia to like suburban Baltimore. Third, you have, it comes down to the current economic issues, and even in counties where that, you know, were supposedly flush with cash or they were the richest counties in the country or what have you, you know, they're all looking at, you know, cutbacks on basic services, police services, education, that kind of stuff. And nothing that makes it seem like that they're going to have to pay a heavy price tag to build a stadium, that's just not going to interest them. And the other factor, and for whatever reason, I don't know why this is necessarily the case for this area, but they're just communities, for whatever reason here, seem to be very dead set against this sort of thing. You know, the Redskins looked at a deal in Northern Virginia at Potomac Yards, and it seemed to me like it would be a good idea, but you know, people rose up against it, and it never happened. Baseball, you know, people complain about traffic, they complain about everything down to like the lights of the stadium being too bright for a neighborhood. I mean, it's, you know, it's every little thing in that respect. And the combination of all those factors just make it very, very difficult to get anything done around here.
odd idea, but is it out of the question to raise RFK, play at FedEx Field for 2 years, and build a stadium on the RFK site?
There's a few factors with that. First, the land, as I understand it, is actually federally controlled, and it's very specific as to what can be there. And with that being the case, and Kevin Payne has talked about, the United States team president has talked about, they went through a study to see what it would take to convert RFK into a soccer stadium, which would basically mean tearing off the upper deck, converting the lower bowl, making it more friendly for soccer, where you'd have about a 25,000-seat stadium. The cost of it was going to be more than the $190 million that the PG County Stadium was going to cost. So economically, they didn't feel like that was a viable option. The other problem when it comes to the city is there has been talk from Mayor Fenty about he really wants to bring the Redskins back to that site. And, you know, Daniel Snyder has talked, or at least rumored to have been talked about, wanting to get a dome stadium for that site. That'll be the Redskins' home once again. They want to bring the Super Bowl there. So even if there's going to be new stadium construction there, United's not going to probably be on the top of the list for that either. They don't see FedEx Field as a long-term option. Certainly they could play there for a year or two. The problem there is I don't know cost-wise how that would affect them. You're dealing in Daniel Snyder world. And if that means, you know, fans are going to have to pay $20, $25 or $30 to park like they do at Redskins games to go to United games, people I don't think are going to do that.
It's also too narrow, isn't it? Besides being about four times too big.
Right. I think that's the case. I'm not totally sure in terms of the dimensions, but yeah, I think that's the case. I mean, there have been games played there before. United has played there before. They played a friendly with Chelsea there a couple of years ago.
Women's World Cup games were played there, were they not?
Right. I was there, yeah. Women's World Cup was played there. I was there for one of those. But yeah, as a long-term option, I know United doesn't want to go down that path. And yeah, the stadium holds more than 90,000 people. I mean, you put a good, solid United crowd of, say, 19,000 in there, and you're still going to be playing in a library. You're not going to know that there's anybody there.
Not to mention, obviously, the revenue streams, and having Dan Snyder as a landlord is probably not any more attractive than having the D.C. Stadium Commission as one. Last thing, let me ask you this. Don Garber, statements late today, or an interview with Stephen Goff, said, well, we'll just move the team, as a matter of factly. Now, we're talking about the most successful club in the short history of Major League Soccer. Arguably, its flagship franchise. It's been described as its most authentic fan base. This is unimaginable to me. I mean, I understand the economics of the situation, but of all the teams that MLS would rather not move, you would think this would be the one. Would he actually go to the nuclear option in this case with this club?
I think anything's possible. When you look at it let's compare it to a few years ago in the San Jose situation. Stadium that the ownership of the team, the league didn't want to be in Spartan Stadium. They weren't, and they weren't necessarily happy with the attendance. San Jose goes to Houston, but then San Jose gets a team back and they're working on their stadium deal. Here you have the stadium, which is unacceptable but can probably be where they play for another 3, 4, 5 years, assuming it stays structurally sound. You don't have the attendance problems. I know the first two games this year, the attendance has been down lower than what they'd like. But yes, traditionally, this has been a flagship attraction of the league, both home and away. People come out to see this team play. And so no, I don't think this is, I wrote today that I don't know how helpful Commissioner Garber's comments were today. I don't know that, you know, if this was the NFL, you know, 30 years ago, and Pete Rozelle went on TV and said, if we don't get X, Y, and Z by this date, we're going to move the Chicago Bears to Memphis. People would listen, and people would do stuff, and the Bears would never move to Memphis. As popular as DC United is, as loyal as the fan base is, this isn't something that's going to send lawmakers scurrying around to scour their counties trying to find a home for this team. The selling work has still got to be done by the front office. It's still got to be done with the league. And what the league and the commissioner would be better spent doing, in my humble opinion, would be working with the club to produce a better deal for a different jurisdiction, wherever that may be, where they can defeat that perception of, hey, this team's coming into my town and wants to build a stadium and they're going to make us pay for all of it. Once they do that, they can get this deal done. I think one of the real sticking points in PG County was that if on the off chance that revenues didn't meet their goals, which I think they would have, but in case they didn't, the state was on the hook for whatever money was left over. And that process, I don't think that's going to work in any jurisdiction around here, given the way the economy is right now. But I still think we're a long way off from seeing the team move. I think the team can stand to play in RFK for another 3 or 4 years. I think the team, the fans will still continue to support the team. And I still, for whatever reason, I still think in that time that something is going to get done. But it's up to United to find the right place, structure the right deal, and get the league to support it. And I don't know that, you know, Garber going out and saying, well, we're going to move the team. Where are they going to move them to? If they move them to St. Louis, there, as far as I know, there isn't a set place for them to play. So are you going to play them in the Edward Jones Dome where the Rams play? Ottawa didn't get an expansion team because they couldn't settle up the stadium issue with relation to the possible Canadian Football League expansion team in Ottawa. That's still being worked on. And if you move one of those teams, MLS loses an expansion fee. And I mean, Garber is a lot of things, but I don't know him to be a person who will, you know, turn down a $40 million check from someone or $35 million, whatever the expansion fee is going to be. So I still think it's a long way from that. He certainly doesn't want to do it, and I think we're a good. There are people that are freaking out, thinking that, you know, next year the team will be playing somewhere else. I just don't think that's going to be the case just yet.
All right, Dan. Ed is not as pessimistic as probably some of the DC fan base is, which probably thinks that the sky is falling. He doesn't think DC will be moving anytime soon. Do you share that optimism?
Again, I understand the pessimism because look at what happened, as you mentioned. Look at what happened with San Jose. But on the other hand, Garber had similar threats, certainly about Salt Lake when they were negotiating that stadium. I think also they had briefly talked about moving the Metro Stars, and nobody really thought they would abandon the New York market. The Washington market is somewhere in between. I think their success on field is not as much of a heat shield as it probably should be, because they have shut down supporter shield winning teams. They have shut down teams with tradition, and so as long as there's another market out there, as long as there's a St. Louis or a Montreal or Miami or whoever willing to take a team, I think that's what's going to make this threat credible.
All right, when we come back, we'll talk more about stadiums, but we'll talk about ones that are already standing and in good shape and which could be used for the World Cup the next time it comes back to the United States. Don't go away. You're listening to Four at the Back with Dan and Ken.
Hey, this is Willard Scott for the American Council of the Blind. If you lost your sight today, what would you do tomorrow? How could you keep your job or finish college? How could you look after the new baby? Or how could you get places without driving there? What about matching your socks? Well, the American Council of the Blind and its 75 affiliates have answers to all these questions. Call the American Council of the Blind in Washington, D.C. Toll free 1-800-424-8666 or visit the website www.acb.org.
You are listening to Four at the Back with Dan and Ken. Topic 3.
The U.S. is going to host another World Cup in the future, Dan. I don't think that's a question. They're currently bidding on the 2018 and 2022 Cups, with England a favorite to get the earlier one. And this week, USSF released a list of 70 possible venues for their bid, ranging from the usual suspects, the obvious choices like the new stadium in the Meadowlands, Foxborough, and the new Dallas Cowboys Stadium. And there's some oddball choices on this list as well, like the Big House in Ann Arbor, Notre Dame Stadium. What did you make of this list?
I thought, as I said in my incredibly unpopular Big Soccer blog, I think this is for the worldwide audience, who aren't going to check to see that Kinnick Stadium, for example, only has temporary lights, or that Memorial Stadium in Berkeley doesn't have enough parking even for the Cal Bears. They will look at the size of these places and realize that number 50 through 60 would be in the top five of a lot of the bidding, certainly the way South Africa has gone. I think this is just sort of a big advertisement for the United States infrastructure, especially as the economy goes south worldwide. I think the economy is hitting ways that we just didn't expect, not just in the United States but abroad. And I think Brazil needs to be. I wonder if this isn't a shot at 2014. I wonder if this isn't a way to sort of try to take it away from Brazil. They'll never say so publicly, but And it would be such a crisis to take the World Cup away from Brazil, of all places. But still, you have to wonder, because 70 stadiums, I mean, that's 35 would have been enough to blow any other country out of the water. When you get up to 70, you're adding sugar to a banana split. I mean, there's an agenda there. Well, and the other one that I think may be happening is trying to get non-traditional markets to bid on United States games, either for women or men, get into these big stadiums, these great facilities that aren't being used, like the big house, like Neyland, if that's how you say it, in Knoxville. 100,000 seat stadiums, with every bell and whistle. Why not see if there's a soccer fan out there?
What do you think USSF looks for in a World Cup venue now going forward with the lessons of 94, where I'm still to this day amazed that we played World Cup games in the Cotton Bowl?
That was the last great hurrah of the Cotton Bowl. It's a shame that the Dallas Burn didn't get the word, but I think what you said in your highly popular and intelligent blog, I think they are going to look for things like the new Dallas Cowboys Stadium, especially for a World Cup final where it has literally everything. I think the top five stadiums are just going to be fresh off the assembly line, shiny, wonderful facilities. I don't think you're going to see the Rose Bowl, for example. I think the Rose Bowl is just a little too old to recover. That's not to say they're not going to be in Southern California, but if they're in the Rose Bowl, it'll just be for group games. And I think they're going to look for newly furbished. I mean, even by the time we get to 2018, even something like the new Soldier Field, that's going to be one of the older stadiums.
And it's still one of the smaller ones at 61.5. And I think you're right. I think if the Rose Bowl only sat like, say, 80,000, maybe 75,000 people, it's not even seriously considered because of its age, because there's a stadium outside Washington, D.C. that's as big as the Rose Bowl. It would have to have some renovations in it to host a World Cup game, but you think they wouldn't like to have a World Cup final in our nation's capital? You think Snyder wouldn't get a big blue veiner over that one?
Well, I think this is the other reason I think they're looking out the corner of their eye at 2014. As soon as we host the World Cup again, MLS is set, at least for the next 10 years afterwards. That it's priceless, literally priceless publicity. So having the World Cup come back to Washington or New York, or I don't see why you wouldn't have it in Invesco to help out the Rapids. Certainly there's, and again, I'm not talking about turf or anything that the purists would complain about, but why not Seattle? The only reason you don't have it in Vancouver is because the USSF hates foreigners. But that's the sort of thing that the World Cup would do. It would put MLS safer than the NHL. I mean, that's the kind of concept that I don't have the words to explain. That's the importance of the World Cup.
Well, if they don't pull South Africa in 2010, I don't know how on earth they're going to pull Brazil in 2014, but I like where your head is at.
Well, the only reason they haven't, this is my theory, is because Nelson Mandela is still alive and they just could not do it to him. They would not wreck this hero's last years on earth. That's the only reason South Africa still has the World Cup.
Well, plus that, and Sepp Blatter is determined to get the Nobel Peace Prize.
They'll give the Nobel Peace Prize to anyone. You and I will get it someday.
I'm looking for mine in the mail.
Topic 4.
And finally, I bet you didn't know, the indoor soccer season comes to a close this Saturday. The Baltimore Blast host the Rockford Rampage in the National Indoor Soccer League Championship match. For the uninitiated out there and on the other side of the desk from me, last year we had a 9-team indoor soccer league. That went away, and instead of one new league, we had two and a half, if you count the professional arena soccer league. We had the NISL, we have the Extreme Soccer League, or the XSL. They've got 4 teams, NISL has 5 teams. No playoffs in that league. Congrats to the Detroit Ignition for winning that one last week. Dan, have you ever paid any attention at all to the indoor game?
When I was a lad, when the NASL went indoors, and that looked to be the future of the sport, and then it became the sport of the 80s, and now we have, the only reason to have 3 leagues is because indoor soccer is having a renaissance. I'm sorry, I couldn't keep a straight face for that. I don't know what people are thinking. I don't know why you have, why someone doesn't just have an intervention and say there's not room for three leagues. There's not room for two. The people on the outside should just get together and start another women's soccer league or something productive.
Well, I can tell you this. There is an owner in one of the leagues who's trying to get owners from the other leagues to talk about a possible merger, so maybe this will just be a one-year thing. I don't know. I'm told there's been some positive response, but hopefully the fact that this winter was fairly ridiculous can break that logjam, and maybe we'll come up with one barely recognized indoor soccer league rather than three barely recognized indoor soccer leagues. But you're right about when you go back to the 80s, the things that people were saying then, you know, the MISL after the NASL went under, you know, all the really good foreign players came in and played indoors. They were outstanding players. Steve Jungle first made his name indoors, then he was an outdoor MVP, came back in, and everybody thought, this is the future of the game in this country. We can't make it professionally in this country without indoor soccer. And 25 years later, that statement looks ridiculous. But at the time, there was something to that.
Well, it is, you'd mentioned the players, and the one thing that was not ridiculous was the quality of the players. It was a long and distinguished list of, and it went all the way to Preki.
You can't stop Preki, you can only hope to contain him.
And it still has its sort of lingering effects today now that outdoor soccer is more or less back, and it's really hard to see what indoor soccer now has to do with the, I guess, the mainstream game. It's easy for fans to dismiss it, but it's short of calling it a unique American art form. There are fans, there are traditions, and it's that's what makes it a little disturbing to see the comedy going on with the people running it, because it's not soccer, but it's its own sport, and it does have its fans. It does have its history. It deserves better. It really does.
And in a lot of respects, the rebirth of outdoor soccer was the worst thing that could have happened to indoor soccer, because seriously, all the good players, and especially the good foreign players, who otherwise would have come over to play in the indoor game, have gone outdoors to MLS. What indoor soccer does today is provides off-season employment for guys in USL, that level of player.
That's true. I think it's going to stay that way as long as there is an MLS. But the topic of whether and how much of the old guard of soccer in America wants MLS to fail is probably best left for another day.
I will have to watch that story as it develops over the summer and into the fall. Okay, that's it for this edition of Four at the Back with Dan and Ken. Send us your feedback.
What's the email address?
The email address is podcast@ken.com. If you send us your comments, your questions, your criticisms, we'll read them on the air. If you send us an MP3 file, we'll use that in the show. It'll even be more like real radio that way. Dan, any final thoughts?
Nope.
Not a one. Here's one. We're on iTunes now, folks. Please go to iTunes. Look for us. Please subscribe or go to ken.com, or if you read Dan's blog, as I know you do, you'll always have a link to it. Download the show. We'll keep working on getting it better. He's Dan Loney. I'm Ken Tomash. Thanks for listening. Until next time, this has been Four at the Back.
Well, there it is. A match that had everything, and one that certainly lived up to its promise. It's only a pity that somebody usually has to lose. But there's always another day. Another great match to be drawn, lost, or won, when we'll join you again.